Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
Hey guys, welcome back to Magic TV. My name's Greg. It's 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic. Now, today I'm going to be talking about or to somebody that you might not have heard of before. He's new to the creator kind of world, but his first trick really left an impression. It sold out at Murphy's Magic. Then it had to be reordered, which is huge, especially when it's your first release. And he's already got another two releases on the horizon, ready to come out by the end of the year. You're going to be seeing this person an awful lot over the next few years in the creator landscape. And I can't wait to find out more about him, because honestly, he's somebody I don't really know that much, but he's somebody that everybody is talking about. So, without further ado, I'm going to introduce him. It is the one and only Joel Anthony. How are you doing, Joel? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good, Greg. Thanks so much for having me on. That's yes, great to be here.
You're more than welcome. So, yeah, I mean, we met for the first time at the Session Magic Convention 2024, and you were just prepping to bring out Hung, Drawn, and Quartered. At that point, it was kind of like you had it ready. Obviously, you brought that out with Pocketful of Miracles. And then that's come out. People have been raving about it. A lot of people have given it really positive reviews. And off the back of that, you've got a bunch of other stuff coming out as well. I want to talk about everything. I want to talk about your creative process. I want to talk about what led you to become a creator. I want to talk about where you are in the magic world as well. But Joel, a lot of people won't have heard of you because you've literally come out of nowhere. So what I'd like to do, first of all, if that's okay, is give people a bit of a frame of reference, do a bit of an origin story, find out a bit of your career, your journey into magic, and it all starts with how you got into this. So obviously you live over in the UK, but I believe you're from Australia, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I've been here for about 5 years, but yeah, I'm from Australia originally.
So talk to me about when you got into magic and how that all came to be.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be similar to other people's stories in terms of age. I was about 8 or 9 years old, I think. It was at a time where I went to a restaurant close to my house, and there was a resident magician there. I've never seen a magician before other than, you know, clips on TV and things at the time. And yeah, he was doing table hopping magic, and, you know, got to see the classics such as dynamic coins and, you know, sponge balls and a whole bunch of thumb tip stuff. I was just going home sort of figuring what crevices in my fingers can I hide a silk, you know, and I'm trying to stuff, you know, like, you know, little things to try and figure out how he did it. But yeah, I remember buying sort of those little magic kit at the time, getting the silks and being like, how does it work? And then we sort of a restaurant we sort of went to, you know, every now and then with the family. So we saw him again and found out that unfortunately for him, he lived a couple of houses down from me. So the poor bloke had this, you know, 8 or 9 year old kid run up to his door and knock and say, you know, can you please show me another trick? Can you please teach me something? And it sort of grew from there. And he sort of became my mentor in magic. And I feel sort of very blessed that it wasn't sort of just videos and books that I lent into, but I had someone there to physically show me, you know, how to do everything. Somehow I do magic left-handed, even though I'm right-handed. So I blame him for that. It's odd. I don't know, Craig, but you're watching a tutorial, I have to like mirror everything. I don't know how it happened, but yeah, so we sort of stayed in touch, and he sort of would mentor me through magic, and got to the point where I was doing my own shows and all that. And he started showing me a bit more mentalism, and I was getting into that sort of thing. And we ended up doing a couple of shows together in Australia, sold out a couple of different shows.
How old were you at this point?
This point, late, I would have been 17, 18. So I sort of, yeah, about that, because I was starting to drive and drive to gigs and stuff, and did a couple of shows together. And sort of I started going from mentalism that I really enjoyed. I started moving away to more visual stuff and close-up magic, and sort of dabbled in parlor stuff and started learning a bit more about books and sort of the more classic magicians of, you know, of our time, and sort of got into that. And started studying the history of magic, and he had like a whole library of books on magic, and I would just borrow books like a local library. Just every time I was over there, grab another book, take it home, which was great. And then led to, obviously, fast forward a few years later, I was doing gigs in Melbourne, and some great gigs and you know, awesome experience. And then decided to move over to the UK for travel and work. And I'm a school teacher, so I came over here to you know, do some work and travel, and then COVID hit and decided to stay for a bit. But, you know, he's sort of, you know, been a really close mate, and we've sort of, you know, not just stayed in touch, but we've caught up when we can, you know, constant, you know, Zooms and things like that. And sort of like a father figure in my life, I'd say. So, you know, we're very close, and he's taught me up to a certain point everything I knew at the time. And then I sort of pushed on researching what I enjoyed. And I'd always sort of dabbled in like trying my own thing, but in terms of creating magic, but I never thought of myself as a creative person, if that makes sense. So, you know, I'm seeing releases come out, I'm just like, oh, you know, that's so cool, like how do they come up with these ideas? Or, you know, like, oh, surely everything that has been done in magic, you know, there is to do, there's nothing left, everything's been covered, you know. And then, you know, obviously that as a teenager you sort of think like there's nothing left, you know, everything's been done. But, you know, as I've sort of gone to lectures and things over the years, and, you know, even up to more recently at the session, I saw Adam Wilber there, and he lectured, and I spoke to him afterwards and talked about creativity and how, you know, how sort of to spark that creativity in your mind. And it turns out that without really knowing about it, I'd come up with a couple of cool things, but I'd not pursued it because I thought, well, that's just something I'm playing with. It's not something that other people might do or might enjoy. So when I started doing conventions, which they're not really accessible to Australians, like there's no, you know, big convention over in Australia. So coming here and going to Blackpool for the first time and, you know, going to the session and things, when you're starting to show other people things that you've come up with or things that you're playing with, you know, and you start to see their reactions. But I think more importantly to me, like their ideas, and they were saying, oh, well, you can do this with it, do this with it. And I'm just like, they're fooling me with something that I was coming up with. Like it's, you know, it was sort of, you know, crazy to me that's a thing. So even with Hung Drawn and Quartered, you know, I've had people send me videos and I've seen things that I'm just like, well, I know how that works, but I don't feel like I know how that works. You know, they're fooling me with my own trick. So yeah. And then I had the idea for Hung Drawn and Quartered for quite a while, sat on that idea for a couple of years, and sort of watching sort of card to location plots come and go. And I'm sort of like, is this still something I should, you know, think about? And then, yeah, so sort of the idea came about, and ended up bringing that out with Harry's company. And yeah, it was well received. So yeah, that's sort of a quick backstory into sort of who I am and how I got here.
That is a very quick backstory. I mean, that's wow. So much that let's unpack some of it.
Yeah.
So you are a school teacher over here in the UK.
Yeah.
Do you still find time to perform as well? Because I know my wife was a ex-teacher, and I know how hard, despite what everyone says, how ridiculously hard teachers work. My wife, when she was a teacher, I'd never see her. Every evening she'd be marking all day, every day she'd be in school. Normally on the weekend she'd be recovering and marking and lesson planning, and the amount of red tape just made my head spin. Teachers work really hard. Like, do you have time still to perform now you're over in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, when I first came over, I did a couple of sort of public shows that were advertised through venues and sort of some parlor stuff and all of that. I did sort of fall in love with creating a little more in the last 5 years than I had previously. And I think that is down to that, exactly that. I don't have as much time on my hands as, you know, when I was a uni student and all of that. So, you know, in the last 5 years, I've fallen in love with creating, because something that I might just be, you know, playing with, you know, maybe on my break at work, or, you know, on the bus on the way home, you know, sort of come sparks another idea and I get home and I want to sort of put my energy into that, you know, and I feel like that sort of helps me to become revived again over the weekend. You know, I know if I was going out to perform, I would love it. And I would, you know, I still love performing. I'll never not love performing. But I feel like, you know, seeing some ideas come to life sort of gives me, you know, energy and sort of that's what I like to put my time into when I can. But you're absolutely right. You know, like teachers are, you know, we're run off our feet and we very rarely get time. And, but the time I do get, I sort of found that creating was that sort of happy medium when I didn't have the time to put into performing. But obviously if I get a call tomorrow, I'll be there to perform because I'll never not love performing.
And let me ask you a question about creativity. You say over the last 5 years, you've kind of fallen more in love with that side of things. Is there a particular reason for that? What do you love so much about creating and creating magic, especially, you know, for other magicians to enjoy?
Yeah, I think for me, it's, you know, when I was younger, I didn't really understand that just because a concept already exists doesn't mean you can't take that concept and improve upon it or put your own twist on it or, you know, change something. You know, when I was younger, I thought, well, Svengali deck's been done. You know, like it was like, you know, Rough and Smooth's been done, you know, but, you know, your products coming out, you know, you've, you know, even now it proves that, you know, it doesn't stop with, you know, the traditional use of a gaff deck, you know, and I think I'd always been playing with that idea of something that already was there, but using it in a completely different way or tweaking the method slightly so I can do something else with it. And I think that's what excites me. Like I get really excited now when I see something and I go, you know what, would it work if I did this? And I just change this one aspect of the method and then it opens up all these new doors. And, you know, of course there's that original crediting and there's that original creator that, you know, if it wasn't for that, you wouldn't be opening new doors in magic. And, you know, I never want to, you know, think that something's completely original, but I love the idea that, you know, just because a concept has been done doesn't mean that, you know, that idea is shut off. And like I said, with a lot of your new stuff that's come out more recently in the last few years has sort of also, you know, hopefully sparked that in other people as well. There's not one way to use something, you know? Yeah. And I think that's what really excites me about creating. And I think what I had a misconception of was that creating meant cutting off performing. And that's couldn't be further from the truth, because when you're creating something, how do you know if it works? You know, you've got to go out and trial it. You've got to go out and perform, even if it's to other magicians, it's, you know, stopping someone on the street and performing, you know, you've got to work it. So, you know, like with Hung, Drawn and Quartered, like it wasn't something that I just thought of and then I said, yeah, I'll release that. You know, it was so much fun when, and I know as magicians, we're guilty of this, especially when you show the method to another magician and they just laugh or they're just smiling at it. Because I know for some magicians, you know, that's also a lot of the fun of it is the method. But I think, yeah, for me, it's seeing that creating didn't mean compromising performing. And that's, I think I love that sort of synchronicity between the two.
No, that's good. That's really good. That's fantastic. And here's a question. Obviously, the first trick you brought out was Hung, Drawn and Quartered. You're now, and we'll talk about these in a second, but you're now on the verge of bringing two more effects out, which yeah. You're bringing out yourself directly with Murphy's. The question I get on the channel all of the time, like the amount of questions I get about this is, when I bring out a trick, how should I do it? Should I bring it out myself? Should I bring it through a production company? Should I go to someone like Penguin Magic or go to a smaller production company like Pocketful of Miracles? What should I do? What's the pros? What's the cons? What's your viewpoint? Is that as somebody who's now decided to bring a couple of tricks out yourself, you've worked with Harry's company, you know, initially, what advice can you give people that are new to the creator space that are wanting to do that sort of thing?
Yeah, for sure. I think there's always going to be benefits in working with as many people as you can. Obviously, when you start, you know, you've got to make a choice and it's sort of like, where do I go? I think if you have, you know, the ability and the time and the resources to create yourself, then that's definitely worth exploring, because you can always approach Murphy's and then because it's yours, you can approach other companies and say, look, is this something you'd be interested in? However, in saying that, going through a production company you know, it's such a breath of fresh air, because if they really like what you've brought to them, you know, you've got someone on your side and on board to sort of help push this through. And I think for me, you know, with my first one, my first release, that was the way that I decided to go, which was great. And I would never deter anyone from, you know, going to a production company, big or small, and say, look, here's an idea. And if they take it, great, because you're going to have someone on side to sort of help you through the process and help you every step of the way from sort of conception through to, you know, getting the trick out and getting an actual release. So if you have tricks out already and you have like sort of released things, then, you know, I'm sort of the thought that, you know, work with as many people as you can, because you're going to have experience, different experience. You're going to have, you know, you're going to grow as a person and grow as a creator. If you work with different people, if you work by yourself, you know, you're going to have and start to forge sort of relationships with different people. And I think you'll learn a lot about yourself as well along the way, especially if you decide to go through yourself and through other companies. You know, I think, you know, just don't be afraid to back yourself, but also, you know, have people for support, because surrounding yourself with people that believe in an effect and will help sort of back you with that, that's, you know, that's priceless as well.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I'd agree with all of that. So is there a production company that you kind of have a bucket list of working with? You know, like, I would love to work like, for me, it was Penguin Magic, I think. You know, like, I buy a lot from Penguin Magic. It's like the number one magic shop in the world. If I could work with Penguin Magic, that'd be amazing. Is there a kind of a company that you kind of look up to and go, you know what, I'd love to work with that company?
I think it's Penguin's definitely up there as well. I think, you know, Penguin is sort of one of those ones that everyone, like, if you just mention to a magician, where do you buy your magic? You know, a lot of the time they will say Penguin. And I think for me, I've already hit one of them, which was, you know, and it didn't go directly through Murphy's, like, they didn't produce the trick. However, selling a product through Murphy's was sort of like, I sort of had to rub my eyes and blink a few times that my first product was worldwide, you know, like.
Well, they
know,
don't say yes to everybody. So, I mean, that's just phenomenal right there. That's great.
No, that's true. So I think that's one of them already hit, to be quite honest with you. Growing up a lot, I was into decks of cards. So sort of collecting decks and all like the Theory 11 and Illusionist decks. And, you know, so part of me would be like, you know, sort of maybe down that route one day, just for the sheer fact of, you know, I had so many of their decks growing up, and, you know, I loved opening a deck and seeing, you know, that logo and, you know how it goes. But I think Penguin definitely is on the list for sure. And I think that, you know, having this experience through Murphy's as well has sort of just been sort of, I've racking my brain to sort of understand it all. But yeah, no, Penguin, I think, is definitely the same as you, definitely right up there.
That's great. Okay, so I've got lots of other questions, but first of all, how much can you tell us about these two new releases that are coming out? I'm sure you can't say everything, but is there anything you can tease us with or mention or?
Yeah, so the two new releases coming out, I mean you've seen a glimpse of what they can do. I think the best way to describe it is, one is definitely more mentalism based. We've got a nice mentalism effect that, not an effect per se, it's a utility that you can use. A lot of magicians and mentalists already use this sort of prop, and it's going to allow you to open up a whole bunch of new doors and new ideas within a lot of pre-existing mentalism routines. But, you know, as it's been shown to me, like, you know, some of the stuff you can do is just, I didn't think create with this prop. There'll be a base.
It's got a lot of versatility to it. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and there'll be a base, a couple of base routines for you. But once you get your hands on these, I think you're going to sort of run wild with the idea. And the second idea is a very visual utility device that I think if you do anything with cards, you're going to really enjoy this. It's very visual. I showed Lloyd Barnes at Blackpool this idea, last Blackpool, and he loved it. I had people asking me already, they're like, oh, so can I grab one now? And I was a bit like, well, you know, soon.
That's great.
But, but
that's
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's really cool. And yeah, so that's a very visual, if you love visual card magic, this is sort of, yeah, this will definitely be right up your alley.
Yeah, I saw a sneak peek of this and it's very, very clever. It's a really, what's the word I'm looking for? It's an evolution of an existing gimmick that I'm not sure why people haven't done this before. You know, it's one of those things that you look at and you go, why didn't I think of this? This is a logical thing that I'm seeing in front of me that makes this thing better. Why did I not think of that? And it's fine to go to say that after the fact, but the fact is I didn't think of it. You know what I mean? It's very clever, really, really good.
Yeah, no, that's a good way of putting it, Craig. I think it's an evolution of stuff, something that already exists. And I think for me, I had this idea many, many years ago, but I thought it would be, you know, a crediting nightmare. And I thought that it's got to be done. And, you know, and I was like, I approached some magicians that have done similar things and, you know, and shown them the method. And when they said, right, I haven't done that yet. You can, you know, you have my full blessing to go ahead. You know, it's lovely when, you know, when you get that, but yeah, I'm very excited for it. I'm interested to see how it's received for sure.
I'm sure it'll be very well received. And so both of these are coming out before the end of the year.
Yeah, they'll be out by the end of the year.
And what's, you know, we're going to talk about your goals later on, but what are specifically your goals when it comes to creating? Like, are you working on your next range of stuff? Are you wanting to bring out multiple things over the next few years? What's your goals as a creator? Are you... yeah, you know, like, because some creators will bring one thing out a year or one thing out every 3 or 4 years. Some people will bring out like one thing every month. You know, there's no right or wrong to it. Where are you with that? What's your headspace in terms of creating and you want to achieve moving forward within that space?
That's a good question. I think for me, a goal isn't necessarily like how much or how many products to bring out in a certain time period. I think for me, it's more, I've got a big sort of back catalog of ideas that I'm exploring sort of simultaneously. But I want the stuff I bring out to be workable. Like, you know, when I was growing up, it was very much, I, you know, couldn't afford this or that, or I couldn't afford, you know, certain tricks. But what I did buy, you know, every magician's been through it. You know, you open it up and you go, oh, well, that's not very usable in the real world. So I think for me, what I want is, I want to bring out things that magicians will go, oh yeah, I can see myself using that at a gig, or yeah, that's, you know, like hung, drawn and quartered for those people that do have it. You know, it's immediately reset the second you put it in your pocket. Like, you know, you don't have to fumble around with gimmicks and things to reset it. So for me, like, I could easily bring out a couple of the tricks a year, but I think for me, it's making it right and making sure that the tricks are right to come out before anything else. So anything I bring out is not going to be rushed ideas. They're going to be things that have been thought out and used and made sure that, you know, people will use them in the real world rather than, you know, going in the bottom drawer that we all have.
Yeah, that's important. That's great. Yeah, you don't want anything going in the bottom drawer. And what about you as a lecturer? A lot of creators, after they've brought out 2 or 3 ideas, they start pushing for lectures. Is that something that you would like to do? Would you like to see yourself lecture at some point in the future? Or you might done a bunch of them. I don't know if I have. I very much apologize.
That's fine. I think lecturing is definitely something I would love to do. I think presenting is pretty natural to me. Being a teacher, I think I'm very comfortable standing at the front of a room teaching and showing ideas. And I think what I would love to do is, because I have so many ideas that I would love to share with magicians that I haven't put into a product. You know, I've got some really cool ideas that I would love to lecture. And you know, if any clubs that reach out and say, hey, would you love to do a lecture? I was like, yeah, 100%, you know, having, you know, hopefully by the end of this year, have 3 products out. I think I could, you know, triple, quadruple, 5 times that amount in a lecture, because I've just got so many ideas that someone could make at home. It's just wanting to present them. And, you know, and I've not that I'm necessarily, you know, a notable coin worker. I've got ideas on, you know, coin stuff that I would just love to share with others. Cause, you know, when I've shown some of these things, people go, oh, that haven't thought of that. And it's happened quite a few times that, you know, not that I'm saying I'm, you know, an incredible coin work. I'm just saying that I think I have something to contribute if I was being booked for a lecture, that I could actually contribute something that people would take home and actually use.
That's great. That's amazing. And what is Joel? What is your creative process? You know, as somebody who's brought out three tricks this year, you've talked about over the last 5 years, constantly coming up with ideas. You've got a lecture full of ideas. You're working on new routines. You know, I've spoken about this on the channel before, but a lot of people, when they get into magic, they want to become a creator. They see the people that are creating and we put them on pedestals. And a lot of people come in and go, yeah, I want to do that. And a lot of people can't, unfortunately. So, and you can. So what advice can you give to somebody about the creative process? What process do you go through? Do you sit there and force yourself to come up with something? Do you sit there and wait for inspiration? How do you find that inspiration? Like what process do you go through?
Yeah, it's a good question because everyone's different, right? Like, you know, you listen to a lot of these talk magics and you know, everyone's got something slightly different. And I think for me, it's, that's that classic thing of comes from a mistake or something you're doing that, you know, doesn't go quite right. And you go, actually, let me go down this avenue. I think for me also, I'm a very sort of fidgety person. Like I always have a coin in my hand or a poker chip or, you know, like just sort of, you know, as a lot of us are, right? We're always sort of holding something. And you know, it might be I'm holding a piece of paper folded up, and I might for some reason think, wouldn't it be really cool if I could do this right now one-handed? Or oh, wouldn't it be really cool if I could do, you know, I'm holding a coin. It's like, oh, wouldn't it be really cool if I could just, you know, do this thing with this coin? And it's almost like how do I put this? It's almost like an unachievable goal in my head. Like, what's the most crazy thing I could do with this right now? Like if I could actually do something with this coin, what's the craziest thing I could do? You know, and then I'll sort of work backwards to see like, okay, is there something similar that I could do with sort of an achievable method? Or, you know, if I was to really have a deck of cards and, you know, just for an example, make the whole deck vanish, you know, just like literally click my fingers and it turns invisible. Okay, not doable, but what's the closest thing I could do with a method that I could come up with? So for me, it's a lot of writing it down, and you know, I'll forget about an idea and then I'll sort of go through some of my notes and be like, oh yeah, oh, let's come back to that. I think I have a new idea for that. But my brain works in funny ways like that. I'll just sort of think, you know, oh, what if I could just, you know, take this Akita box lid and just twist it, and it's just, you know, been twisted in, you know, like just something crazy. And then from that, I might end up going back to cards somehow, but oh, some convoluted way to get there. Like, oh, it's a twisting metal lid, and then oh, imagine if I could do that with a card, or you know, and sort of I find roundabout ways to get there. But I suppose my long-winded answer to this is don't let your imagination get in the way of creating a trick. Just because it seems wild in your imagination doesn't mean that it won't lead to a trick idea or method that is actually doable. Yeah. You know, don't cut yourself off at like, oh, but there's no way a deck could actually turn invisible. You know, like think of it as, you know, like you might start there and then end up at a coin trick. You might start there and end up at a rubber band trick. You know, just let the creative process sort of flow. And then it might take a couple of weeks, couple of months, could be a year, 2 years before you find a sort of something that you settle on that, you know, but don't let a wild idea get in the way of creating a method that, you know, is actually doable.
That's really good advice. And that's something that I've kind of held true through my entire career. You know, I think that a lot of magicians, what they do is they could have created something wonderful and they have that initial spark, that initial idea, but they dismiss it because they can't come up with a method. And I think if you look at every single trick that's come out that's sold big, I think that if you had the original idea for that, you wouldn't have a method. Look at the last two big Murphy's tricks, Liquify by Tobias. You know,
yeah.
That's a perfect example. You know, you're gonna take a bunch of gunk and turn it into a ring. How am I gonna do that then? Like that sounds impossible, absolutely impossible. Until it's not. Look at Stitch, Titanus's new thing. You're gonna literally pull your finger off and show your hand on all sides. I'm gonna do what now? No, dismiss. Yeah. I'm not going to be able to do that. Forget that. But both Titanus and Tobias, they worked out a way of doing that. They worked out a way of making that happen. And now they're two of the biggest selling tricks of the year.
Yeah.
Of course, they didn't limit themselves. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, 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 really good advice. And is there a particular genre that you like to create in? Because your first trick was a card trick or a finale to a card trick. And the two things that you've got coming up, one is a very clever card gimmick. It's almost a utility device that allows you to do a bunch of stuff. And the other one is a mentalism utility that allows you to do a bunch of stuff from a mentalist point of view. So we're seeing mentalism, we're seeing utility devices, we're seeing clever card gimmicks, we're seeing a finale for a card routine. That's a very eclectic range of material that we're seeing from you so far. You said you're not really a coin worker, but you have coin ideas and so on and so forth. Do you pigeonhole yourself into something, or are you just open to everything?
No, I mean, I'm quite open to everything. I mean, I've like heavily gotten to coins in the last probably 2 years. You know, and I'm sort of, when I get an idea, I go all in. So it went from, oh yeah, I've got a couple of Kennedy halves and, you know, I do maybe a basic Aikido box routine, to now I've got walking liberties that I soften and age myself. I bought more silver Morgan dollars that I'm softening and aging myself. I went all in to like, how do I age coins? How do I soften coins? How do I, you know, I bought everything to like to set that up. And, you know, the Mirage coin set, I had that, and then actually had the original one, and then I ended up getting it made in a Morgan silver dollar. So, you know, I sort of went wild on the coin stuff, and I've got so many coin ideas. But I think the problem that, like, not problem, because there's, you know, that makes it sound negative, but I think sort of just the block I have currently is just the sheer, like, you know, sort of financial aspect of creating coin stuff. They're like, you know, coins are expensive for a reason, you know. They don't just slap the price tag on because it's fun, you know. A lot goes into it. But I'm open to everything, Craig. I think the second that I say I just do card stuff, then a card idea that can be applied to coins or rubber bands or anything else will immediately get dismissed. So by having an open sort of range, and I mean, I love mentalism. I did nothing but mentalism for a couple of years, but just because I have a card trick, and, you know, I don't do mentalism as much, doesn't mean that I can't apply that to a mentalist point of view, you know? So I think by pigeonholing myself, I'm sort of cutting myself off to possible opportunities. So I love all magic. I love stage magic. I love parlor magic. Myself, I perform close up and parlor, but I think, you know, I'm not going to go and create a stage effect, but by having ideas that are sort of interchangeable doesn't mean that, you know, I don't want to stop at cards. Just because it didn't work with cards doesn't mean I can't apply it somewhere else. So, you know, I mean, Liquify, as you said before, like I saw that and I bought it, and I'm just liquefying everything, like, you know. So it's just, I love, you know, that magic where, you know, it's sort of, yeah, not just impromptu stuff, but just stuff that's sort of a bit unusual, you know. And I think in terms of creating, like, a block that I had was 100 and 1/4. If I'm ripping a card off a key ring, it has to have holes and it has to be ripped. How am I going to achieve that? So I took the longest time to figure that out. And, you know, I almost gave up because I'm like, well, I can't get holes in the card. I can't get it ripped when it's signed and things like that. But, you know, the idea of that then sparked an idea I had for, like, you know, key ring ideas. So yeah, I try not to pigeonhole myself too much to answer your question. I think being open to all sort of magic genre, just because you don't perform it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't dabble in and look at creating in that section. Yeah, you're going to need to improve your skills. I'm not saying that you can just sit down and be lazy and be like, oh, I don't do coins. I can do a French drop and that's it. Let me create this coin trick. You know, you're going to have to, you know, push yourself to learn new things. But, you know, just because you don't perform in that genre doesn't mean that, you know, your effect is going to be sort of dismissed, if that makes sense.
No, it does. It absolutely does. 100%. Very, 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 very good advice. So I mentioned that we'd talk about this before. I'd like to mention it right now. Where do you see yourself? So we've talked about your goals as a creator. You know, obviously, you have a full-time job. You talked about how you came over from Australia 5 years ago and you stuck around. What are your goals moving forward, like in general within Magic? Like, are you wanting to perform more again? If the opportunity arose, would you like to be a full-time performer, or do you love having, you know, that teaching position? I know a lot of people love teaching. Would you ever go back to Australia, or are there more opportunities here when it comes to creating a Magic? Like, what are your goals moving forward? What are your big bucket list items? Would you like to lecture at FISM, lecture at Blackpool, compete somewhere? Like, what are your goals moving forward within this industry? Would you've achieved?
Yeah, thank you. It's interesting because you'd asked me a couple of years ago, it would have been like, yeah, full-time performer, 100%. I would love to go and perform full-time. That's what I want to do. I think now, you know, if the opportunity came up, I would love to perform full-time. I think more so now, what I'd love to do is lecture. I want to get some, you know, not that I've got the greatest ideas in the world, but I would love to share what I do have with other magicians. You know, I don't want to go to a lecture and say, this is going to be the best lecture you've ever seen. This is going to be the best ideas. You're going to use every single one of them. Now, I want to rock up and just say, you know, like, you could use some of the stuff. If you even take one idea home with you, you know, that you like and you want to implement, then, you know, I'm flattered that you do. I think, you know, with my teaching background and performing magic, I think lecturing is a nice sort of middle ground. Although, don't get me wrong, I get a call tomorrow, I'm off to perform. Like, you know, I'd love it. But I do think that lecturing is sort of where I want to be. I think if I was a lecturer at Blackpool, I mean, that does sound like a big far-fetched dream at this point in time. But, you know, dream big, you know, I think that would be something I'd love to do one day. But yeah, I think lecturing and sort of continuing to sort of show my ideas and bring out stuff is what I'd love to do. And I mean, even lecturing at the session is such a great convention. You know, I'd love to lecture at the session, and, you know, something like that is something I'd definitely love to do. I'm not sure I'm necessarily the competition type of performer, but you know, it doesn't mean I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't necessarily say no if it came up, because you learn from every experience, right?
You do indeed. You absolutely do. 100%. I mean, let me ask you a couple of quick fire questions, very quickly to finish this off. Is there a particular creator or performer or somebody in magic, or there are a few people that you draw inspiration from, people that you look up to, or that have inspired you and the way that you create?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. I think Josh Jay was a big inspiration growing up. You know, like tricks like, you know, his big deal and things like that just sort of blew my mind as I was growing up and learning that. So, you know, I think his versatility as well in that, you know, he'll bring out triad coins, and then the next thing he's bringing out is, you know, this insane card gambling effect. And, you know, I loved that sort of bouncing back and forth between sort of cards and coins. And growing up, I think it was a big inspiration for me. And then looking like sort of towards the mentalism side of things, you've got obviously Luke Jermaine and Pete Turner and all those guys that you can't sit down with them at the session or at Blackboard and like not learn something just by, you know, watching them, you know, and just the way that they conduct themselves when they're performing is just, I think, you know, there's definitely something to be learned from them. And Luke Jermaine's lecture on, what did he do? Was it, I forgot the effect he did now. I think he came out and did a coin, a matrix effect maybe, but obviously he's known for his mentalism. And he came out and he was saying that, you know, he still practices magic. Even though he's a mentalist, he does mentalism, he still practices sleight of hand. He still practices coin magic and card magic. And you know, he challenged everyone to go and find the trick that you sort of cringe when you watch it, or you think, oh, I really, that's outdated, and go and find a way that you enjoy performing it. You know, and that really sort of inspired me to find a way to, you know, perform some of those classic tricks that a lot of magicians sort of just roll their eyes when, you know, people bring out the big linking rings, or, you know, they bring out those sort of cliche effects. But, you know, just because it's, you know, a trick that you don't enjoy doesn't mean you can't find a way to do it that, you know, is different and that you enjoy doing. So I think that was probably one of the biggest inspirations for me sort of coming over and watching that lecture, like, especially because I'm like, you know, I've got a lot of stuff in my bottom drawer that I sort of just wrote off. and bring it back out and being like, actually, can there be a way that I enjoy doing this? So I think those are some of the guys. And obviously, growing up, Jay, you can't not mention Jay Sankey because he was everywhere. You know, you got the, you know, the early 2000s, you know, his stuff's everywhere. So a lot of those guys really sort of inspired, again, sort of just a bigger, big array of magic sort of ideas, and not just sort of just card guys or just coin guys.
Yeah, I mean, Jay Sankey's material, especially in his early days, was so iconic. I think he inspired an entire generation of magicians. Honestly, I really think he did.
Yeah, definitely, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, just a wonderful creator. Okay, and one more question. And this is something that comes up on the channel an awful lot, and you've kind of answered it, but I'd like to get a little bit more clarity on this. You obviously have a full-time job, but you also create magic. I speak to a lot of people on this channel, and they ask a question that comes up over and over again, which is, hey, I want to make my full-time living from magic. I have a job. When should I make the leap? Now, you've chosen not to make that leap, which is great, because I always say to people, don't feel like you need to turn pro, because when you do, everything changes, because immediately then, being a professional means that magic is your income, your sole income. There's nothing else. So you end up performing the type of magic that you might not necessarily like, but it's the stuff that pays the bills. It's the stuff that people want to see. You know, it just happens. I've got friends that go and do gigs that they don't want to do, and they go and do them because that gig is their mortgage or whatever it may be. So as somebody who has chosen not to go full time for whatever reason, is there any advice that you can give people that are asking this question? It comes up daily on Magic TV. Any advice that you can give from your point of view and your personal experience?
Yeah, no, I can imagine it comes up all the time, Craig, because I've seen it, but also, you know, it's a question of livelihood, right? Because it's hard when you know that if you're going to turn that way, it's going to be your full-time income. So I think for me, it was a pretty easy one in terms of I would like to keep, you know, my daily job, and keeping that stable income, but I still want to explore magic. And I think I still use a lot of time exploring magic, and it's actually insane how much time you can create if you're you know, sort of carving that time out for something. I think as someone that hasn't gone pro, I think my advice would be don't rush it if you don't have to. If you're in a position that you can keep your job and you can do magic as something you love, don't risk turning it into something that you might despise aspects of, because it is very easy to fall out of love with magic. Because there were times where I, as not a full-time performer, would be like, oh, bring out the sponge bowls again, you know, like it would absolutely kill at the event. You know it does well, but it's like musicians playing the same song at every concert. You know, as much as you know that it's going to pay your bills, it doesn't necessarily always fulfill you sort of internally. So if it's something you enjoy doing and you're able to keep a balance, then keep that balance. If it's something that you find is sort of tipping the scales in that you're doing more performing or you're turning down more gigs than it would be worth to keep your job, then that's something I think you definitely weigh up, you know, as pros and cons, and think about the gear in its entirety, not just that month. But I think, yeah, if you can keep that the love relationship you have with magic and keep sort of that balance with your job, then that would be my sort of advice. However, of course, if you're in a position where you can and you could easily just sort of, you know, flick a switch and then become pro, then by all means, like, do it, because if you can do something you love, you never work a day in your life, right?
That's so true. That is absolutely true. I completely agree with you 100%. And one final question, which is, if you could collab with anybody in the magic industry on a project, who would it be?
Oh, that's a tough one. Like, I've got a list that's a mile long, mate. It's hard. I think for me, it's that. I mean, the sort of cop out answer is as many people as possible. But I think if I was able to bring out an effect with someone that I'd had admired in the past. So whether it's Josh Jay or it's Luke Jermaine, or I think anyone from the list I listed earlier would be my go-to, because I wouldn't be disappointed if any single one of them came up and decided to collab with me. And I know it's a bit of a cop-out answer, and some people might be like, just pick one, but it's hard for me. I think it's for me, if any one of those sort of said yes to collabing, it would be an absolute dream come true.
That's amazing. That's absolutely brilliant. This, Joel, has been a great interview. Like I say, a lot of people won't have heard of you, but you're making a big name for yourself in the industry right now, and it's only going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. For people that have watched this that maybe have picked up Hung Drone and Corded and they really liked it and they're looking forward to your new releases, I know you can't tell us much about them at all. You've already told us too much. But can you tell us the names of the tricks so they know what to look for when they drop, and maybe an approximate release date so they know when to check their local? Because going through Murphy's, it's great because it means that it's going to go to every magic dealer in the world. So from your point of view, from a profile point of view, it goes bigger and bigger and bigger, because now everybody that goes into any magic shop anywhere online, anywhere in the world, any physical magic shop, they're going to see your thing right there, which is amazing. So can you tell all of these people just a rough release date and the name of the trick so they know what to look out for?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah, it still blows my mind when you say it goes, all over the world. And when I started seeing Hung Drone and Quartered on sort of international sites, especially when I saw it in a magic shop website back home in Australia, I was just like, that's nuts. But yeah, so the mentalism effect is called thought extraction. So that's the utility device for mentalists. And then that, and the other one is called the slingshot. So the slingshot will be hopefully coming out by the end of October, and then thought extraction should be out by sort of end of November.
That's great. That's amazing. And are you all, I know I kind of roughly mentioned this, but are you already working on the next thing? Because I know these are put to bed. All you're doing right now is dotting I's, crossing T's. It's not like you're having to create anything more with this. These are done. It's just about getting the assets in place for Murphy's. Are you already working on your next thing?
I am. I've got a couple of the next things, it never sort of stops. Ideas come and go, and then, sometimes you sort of realize through your research that it's been done, so you drop that idea, move on, and that's the reality of sort of the world we're in. But I'm always working on something, and I'm excited with a couple of things coming up, and I'm hoping that Murphy's might take those on eventually. But like I said, if I can work with as many people as possible, then that's what I'm going to do.
That's great. And where can people connect with you if they want to reach out to you? Maybe they want to book you for a lecture, because people are always looking for fresh faces on a lecture circuit. Maybe they just want to connect with you about your tricks. Is there how do they connect with you? Do you have a website where people can buy the stuff from you yourself? Do you have social media? Like where can people reach out to you?
So at the moment, you can pick up Hung Drone and Quartered through like the Pocket Miracle site or through Murphy's, any Murphy's magic dealer. The best way to contact me would be through Instagram at Joel Anthony Magic. So if you just search at Joel Anthony Magic, I'll be able to connect with you on there for sure. Any questions you have, feel free to reach out. And even any ideas, if you pick up Hung Drone and Quartered and you've got a cool idea that you haven't seen on the tutorial or anything, shoot it my way. I'd love to. Like I said, I love it when people show me stuff with that and for me. So, yeah, feel free to reach out.
That's amazing. Joel, thank you so much for jumping on the channel. I really appreciate it. I would wish you luck with these two new releases, but I know you're not going to need luck because I've seen them. They're brilliant. They're going to sell very, very well. I can't wait to review them. I think that, that both of them are good. I love both of them for different reasons. I think they're going to go very, very well for you. And congratulations on your success and on your continued success. And I want to tell everyone at home that's watching this to do a couple of things. First of all, connect with Joel on social media. Second of all, if you haven't picked up Hung Drawn and Corded, go and do that. But also look out for these two new items, because honestly, they're really good. I got a sneak peek of them, and very, very, very smart ideas. My mind is racing. You showed me the mentalism one without giving too much away, and I was like, oh, you could do this, and 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 you could do this. It's the sort of thing I love when somebody brings something out like that, where you present a tool to somebody and you give them a few ideas, but then you allow their mind to just go in a completely different direction. It helps, you know, promote creativity to everybody. Really smart ideas. Really, really good. So pick up all of that. Pick up all of his new tricks when they come out on Murphy's, and connect with him. And leave a comment down below. Let Joel know what you thought of the interview. I loved it. I thought it was brilliant. Drop your comments down below. Joel, one more time, on behalf of everyone that's watched this video and Magic TV, thank you so much for being on the channel. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much, Craig. I appreciate it.
No problem. Guys, thanks very much for joining me. This has been Talk Magic with Joel and Anthony. We will see you again. Well, I will see you again tomorrow with a bunch more videos. Don't forget, there's a review show special and a Q&A coming up. Next Saturday, I'll be back with another Talk Magic. But until then, thank you so much for watching. My name is Craig. This is Joel. And this has been Magic TV.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic, magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel.
Magic TV.
Which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.